start my sermon with a little drink of water. So I looked at the three readings yesterday to see what they had in common, you can tell from the music and the pictures and everything else. Water, H2O, the second most important material that we need to sustain life other than air. It said that most people can make it for a month or two without food and still survive, but it can only last for 2 or 3 days without water. It's a substance that most of us take for granted. A single bath will use about 30 gallons of it. If you're a shower person, it takes about 17 gallons of fresh water running down the drain. Just to flush your toilet, even with the new low-flow toilets, is about 1.5 gallons. I think the old high-flow toilets are about 3.5 gallons per flush. This doesn't even count the hand washing, clothes washing, yard watering. We have a swimming pool that's somewhere between 5 and 10,000 gallons. I think I looked up an Olympic-sized swimming pool holds about 660 or 2/3 of a million gallons of water. And I was even teaching my students that a single pair of jeans takes about 500 gallons of water to produce in industry, trying to get the dyes right. And that's not even counting other industries and agriculture. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't be using this water. I do believe in hygiene. We have to shower. We need clothes and we need food. But there's simple things you can do. I always tell my students and my kids, turn off the water when you're brushing your teeth. You don't need to let it be running the whole time that you're scrubbing. You can just turn on and wet your brush. So there's a reason that Earth is called the Goldilocks planet in this solar system. The two planets closer to the sun, Mercury and Venus, they're so hot that if there's any water on those, they instantly turn into water vapor. And then from Mars on back, Pluto's not really a planet, but Mars and all the planets beyond it are so cold that any water on those would turn instantly to ice. Earth is the only planet that's just right as the Goldilocks, that most of our temperatures are between freezing and boiling, so we actually have liquid water on this planet, which is a pretty important requirement for most carbon-based life forms. In October of 2020, we're big moviegoers, so in October 2021, the newest version of the Dune movies came out. I'm not sure if anybody's familiar with the movies or the book. The 1965 book written by Frank Herbert. And I spent about a couple months in the summer, last summer, 2022, reading the book. It's a science fiction story about a desert planet that's so dry people have to wear these special still suits that recycle the wearer's sweat and filter it and turn it back into drinkable water so that they don't dehydrate. The natives on this planet have a religion that's based on water as a sacred and holy substance that makes life possible. That, and there's also spice and some giant sandworms, but that's another story. So what does all this have to do with today's readings? As you can see, the first reading was the Israelites were about ready to mutiny against Moses because he led them into the desert and there was no water and they were afraid of dying of thirst. And then the miracle of Moses hitting the rock and water just flowing out of the rock. The second reading, I kind of looked at that one too. There's a line in that one about, let's see, make sure I lost my spot here. The second reading says, God's love is being poured out into our hearts. And pouring out kind of reminded me of water, so maybe a stretch. And then, of course, the third reading of the well and living water is definitely, water related. Our culture is full of stories that signify the importance of water. I know there's biblical examples of Moses parting the Red Sea and then drowning the Egyptians in afterwards, turning the Nile red. I think Pharaoh had a dream about 7 skinny cows eating the 7 fat cows to signify the 7 years of drought. On the secular side, our culture has a lot of secular examples. There's Ponce de Leon, who's looking for the fountain of youth. Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones, he had to choose wisely when presented with the several grails that he was trying to use to save his father, because only the correct grail would have the life-giving force. And then there's also Monty Python. He was looking for a grail, but got a little distracted trying to figure out what floated in the wood. Ducks are witches and stuff. So, another cool thing about water that I like to tell my students in science class, water floats. Most substances, when they get cold, they get denser and sink. But the fact that water floats is pretty helpful when it comes to things like ice skating. And it's also pretty important for fish living in ponds in the wintertime because if ice would float, it would probably crush them as it was sinking down to the bottom. So another cool thing about water. In terms of geography, most early settlements were along waterways like rivers, the Great Lakes, and that's currently where most major cities are, especially port cities. They use these ports for trade because really nothing beats water in terms of transit efficiency. You can have enormous loads of grain, oils, whatever, and float it on barges or super tankers and move the ships around with relatively minimal effort compared to what it would take to fly the materials around or even transport them over land. These cities along rivers would hydrate their economies and grow their populations. There aren't very many cities in landlocked areas in the desert. Like, I think Vegas is an exception, but most deserts tend to have smaller cities because there's just not enough water to support big populations. And being close to water is also nice for recreational activities like boating and fishing. I know some of us can appreciate that. And then, of course, employment, because if you're a captain, fisherman, something like that, it's also important to be by water. So, one of my favorite classes that I took in college was a class called The Story of Water. It was an interdisciplinary class that was taught by two professors, a science professor and an English professor. And it was taught in a remote location known as Northwoods. It was some property owned by Hiram College up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And it's a very remote area with no electricity or running water. We stayed in a beautiful log cabin on a pristine lake that we could swim and boat on, but the water that we drank came from a well that we either had to hand pump, or I believe there was a windmill. That on windy days, the windmill would pump the water for us, and on non-windy days, we had to pump it by hand. And there's also, of course, no flush toilets. All of our wastes went into composting outdoor outhouses, and we did the same with our excess food. So it teaches. One of the things we learned there is just not to take water for advantage, or not to take water for granted. Thank you. I can't remember exactly how often we showered there. I'm pretty sure it wasn't on daily or by daily basis like we kind of used around here. I think we kind of stayed clean by swimming in the lake. I know our chemistry or science professor taught us about the chemistry, water pollution, and we also talked about water rights out west, where rich cities like Vegas drain the Colorado River before it makes it to the Pacific Ocean. They said for tens of thousands, if not millions of years, the Colorado River flowed all the way from the Colorado Rockies to the Pacific Ocean. But now there's so much water taken out of the Colorado River past the Grand Canyon that I believe there's just dry riverbeds where there used to once be water. And that was very unfortunate for the people, usually poor folks that live downstream that were relying on that water for their livelihood. Our English professor had us read a fictional book called The Monkey Wrench Gang about a group of eco-terrorists who tried to blow up a dam that was under construction to protect the land that was about to be flooded, and also to help the people downstream who needed that water for their survival. Another side note, when Angie and I traveled to Arizona and rented a boat to take on Lake Powell, which is behind the Glen Canyon Dam, the dock's somewhere over here, and we wanted to see how close we could get to the dam. But I remember when we got close, there was some warning signs that said, stay away from the dam wall. I guess they didn't want anybody blowing that up. So, in case we were part of the monkey wrench game, maybe they just didn't want you pressure boat into it. But either way, the dam does a lot of good. It provides water for people, but I know it floods a lot of areas, and so there's kind of controversy on both sides of that. One of my other favorite trips I took was going, just in the summer of 21. Alex and I went to Philmont Boy Scout Camp, which is one of the reasons I got this thing. Philmont's similar to Northwoods in the fact that there's not like drinking fountains all over the place. You're up in the mountains, and everything you need for life you carry with you. So we were required pretty much at all times, whenever we had the chance to get water, to fill up two of these apiece, because this is a 1 liter bottle. We needed to have at least two liters of water with us at all times, and it was always good to have extra. But the only places that had running water that was drinkable was at base camp, and then a few places along the way that had wells. Of course, at the top of the mountain, the water's so, the water table's so low, you wouldn't be able to drill a well anyways. But so there was also very little electricity there. So in terms of showering, I know there's only a couple places that had both water and electricity, which is kind of what you need for a shower. And I know I got could get about one or two showers per week when we were on the trail for about 10 to, or maybe 12 to 14 days. So I think I got about two or three showers, and some of the scouts got less than that, one or two maybe. And I remember a couple of times we had to end up drinking rain. Like, I know at one point I was looking at both of my things. Both of them were empty, and I was getting kind of thirsty, and it started to rain. So we were by a building. The building had a, you know, metal roof, and as water was dripping off the roof, I kind of held my bottle up and got some water from there. I know at least at one camp location there was no fresh water, so we just kind of, there was a mountain stream running by. We filled our water bottles up with the water with the running stream. We would use chemicals. I forget if it was chlorine or some kind of little tabs that kind of kill all the germs and bacteria in case there's something in it. But the whole experience, again, teaches you the importance of water and not misusing it. We didn't have any water balloon fights or water squirt gun fights, water balloon tosses, or anything like that when we were out there. So one of the things I like best about Boy Scouts, it kind of allows you to revert back to a simpler time. Before we had convection ovens, people used to cook on campfires. Before there were smartphones and GPS, people had to use paper maps. Before there was social media that kept people glued to their phones all the time, there was in-person socializing where people would play cards and games and just have old-fashioned fun. Before there were treadmills and Peloton stationary bikes and virtual rides, people would just go outside and hike and ride bikes, you know, real bikes with tires, the wheels would roll over things. And of course, before indoor plumbing was standard, people wouldn't scoff at the idea of outhouses or, you know, not showering every day, every other day. So I think one problem about modern water being so easily accessible is it does cause people not to appreciate it. When you just have to turn on a tap and it's right there for you, you don't value it as much. You have to, you know, carry it from a well like the woman in the story. So coming close to my conclusion here. So what this all winds back to is when Jesus was speaking to the Samaritan woman at the well, she knew how valuable water was and how difficult it was to get. You'd get a day's worth of water, or I don't know, maybe these people had to make multiple trips to the well during the day. And I'm guessing they had to, you know, carry it back on their shoulders, heads, or you know, something, maybe one on each arm to their houses, which were probably not very close, you know, very close by. So when Jesus offered her this living water that makes drinkers never thirst, her first response was, "Sir, give me this water, so I might not be thirsty and have to keep coming back here to draw water." She probably didn't at first grasp the true meaning behind Jesus' metaphor of living water being just as important for the human soul as actual water is for the human body. But she did sense that Jesus was a prophet who could see things that regular humans could not. For instance, he saw past her dirty previous life of adultery, and he could see the future of her at the right hand of God in heaven, washed of all her sins after having received his gift of living water. So I'll end with these two questions. Number one, will you accept Jesus' gift of living water? And then number two, will you work to help protect the earth's water for future generations, as they are just as entitled to it as we are? Thank you very much.